We are live. Hopefully,
We are
my mic's working.
live. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Nerdy Up North podcast. It's a nerdy podcast, and it's hosted by Northern Nerds. I am one of your hosts, Sam.
And I'm the other host, Paul, and we are joined by literally the nerdiest of nerds this evening. As soon as we announced that we were doing a Labyrinth episode, I think this was the most fought after topic that we've had in a while. Like, literally people were actually saying that they wanted in that we've never spoke to before, and I was like, okay, this is getting quite interesting. But yes, we are joined by like, say, regulars of the podcast now, shall we say, or invaders of the normal podcast, shall we say, because we've got Graham, who is normally Star Trekking across the universe with Goodwill, has joined us. And we've got the lovely Dan, who is Sam's partner in crime, who keeps a company on a Monday night when all those scary things come out to say boo and stuff like that.
And me, when I come out.
Say hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hang on, no. We can't cross the streams like this. It's hang on.
I'm just creating a paradox, have I?
Miles.
Yeah.
Miles. It's going to have all the gimmicks now. Goodwill's going to explode. But yes, and we are joined by the Labyrinth aficionado, the person that has been busy. Like, I was actually a little bit scared when I announced that we was doing a Labyrinth episode, because my inbox has never been inboxed so quickly as when Sarah got in there. I was like, I am coming on this episode. You have no say in it. You can go and get fucked if you do not have me on.
Oh, so, my God, Sarah.
I deny everything.
Best way.
I'm just glad we have an expert, you know? I'm just glad that we have someone who's a real fan, like the Pokemon one where we're like, hey, we kind of know this thing, but, you know, we're going to talk about it anyway. I like the idea that Sarah actually has knowledge that's relevant. Yeah.
To be fair, though, the Pokemon knowledge. one, it did go in all the places that we probably expected, and we had fun. We had a good time.
Are we already talking about the bulge with lines like that?
But possibly.
That's right, I'm back.
Yeah. Yes, we've got Sammy, she's back. She's a little bit more tanned than the normal gothy self that she is.
I know, I have colour.
Yes.
Jesus. But I'm also joined by, I've got a dog behind us, I've got one here, and I've got one in the corner. So I apologise if we hear doggies.
Well, to be fair, it is Labyrinth, so it's probably a Jim Henson's workshop all around.
I asked her earlier, but is one of those dogs riding another one?
No. This is the one whose tongue doesn't go in.
Right. It's not even wearing clothes, Sammy. It doesn't even have a little rod stick. I mean, you know, like...
It's a Lancelot coming at us.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's a Didymus. Just be like, about you?
Ambrosius? Ambrosius?
So yes, we are doing, as I can say, one of my absolute favorite movies today. Like I say, with it being a child of the 80s, we are going back in time in the magical world that was Labyrinth. I don't know if Sammy wants to get a disclaimer out early, because there's going to be opinions.
Yes, I do. So everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us in the Facebook group or the comment section, and we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong. We can all agree to disagree and fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behavior out of nerdism.
Well done.
Thank you. It's like she's never been away.
Yeah, did you hear me fuck it up last week as well? Like, I butchered
it. Did not. Did you try it?
I did.
Yeah. It was a shambles without you, Sammy. Yes.
The words in that last week.
Yeah, I said a lot of potty words during it as well. So,
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I didn't get a chance to catch the beginning bit. I did jump in at one point before I went out, but I didn't get a chance. So well done. Well done, you.
See, she supports us even when she's on holiday. Bless her. So are you recovered from your holiday yet, Sammy, or are you still in the holiday blues moment?
No, I'm all good. You will notice on Monday's episode that I am extremely exhausted. I did get back the early hours the following morning and had very little sleep. But yeah, I'm good. I'm back. I'm happy. Monsters is back on Monday. Yay!
She did fine.
And the chat is saying they are loving the new more forward-facing view of Sammy now. So they're all, enjoying seeing your face rather than looking down on you as well. So it might be a new look you have to take up there, Sammy.
We'll see when I get back and if I can get the correct camera angle. But yeah, I'm using my phone tonight, so I can't see any of the chat. So I'm very sorry, but it's good quality for my phone. I'm quite pleased with this.
I have to say, I was shocked when I actually met you in person for the first time because I didn't realize how tall you were. Because I genuinely, in my head, I thought you were like 4 foot tall because I'm so used to seeing you from a distance. You know, I'm like this little tiny square on the thing. And I'm like, oh, she must be really, really small. And then you meet you, you're like, you're my height. How? Yeah. How is this?
I am a giant. I am 5 foot nine. But I felt exactly the same way when I saw you. I was like, how are you so tall?
I'm square accurate. I'm square accurate. Paul can attest and Sammy can attest to this. This is really how small I am.
She's a tiny little dot.
Yes.
Yes.
And she was impressed with the size of Goodwill. We'll leave it at that. But yes.
Hang on, let's rewind that.
So labyrinth.
All I said to him was, you're taller than I thought you were going to be. Let's clear that up. Thank you.
Didn't want to besmirch anyone's character there. So, yes, sorry. So, yes.
I don't have one.
So, yes, when did, like I say, we're going to talk about Labyrinth and, like I say, we'll get the bulge out the way first. So what was the thing that drew you to the Labyrinth, the movie, Graham?
Oh, me? It's one of those weird things where basically I don't remember seeing this as a kid, but I must have done. I really must have done because it would have been on TV and stuff. But like I saw this way later and it was almost one of those like, yeah, you know the movie Labyrinth. And I'm like, yes. and then watch it and I'm like, I have no recollection. It's like Gandalf. I have no recollection of this place. But obviously it hits you because it's so iconic. It's so like, and it's one of these ones where basically like people are like, oh, this is never going to make money. This is never going to be a success. And then you're like, look at it now. Like, and I think that was the wonderful thing about the 80s where studios were willing to take risks, you know,
yes.
Like stuff like Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, where you're like, you know, yes, they might not have been box office smashes, but like they are. You know, a linchpin of like nerd culture nowadays.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, nowadays it's like, oh, well, if we don't know we're going to make a fortune with it, what's the point of making this movie? And you're like, you're missing the point, I feel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But so Labyrinth is just something that like I didn't get into. It just happened. And it's a movie that obviously you like Lee in the chat is going, oh, I haven't seen it. Someone needs to convince me that it's a good movie. So I'll watch it. And I'm like, you should just have watched it. You know, how have you avoided it? You know,
we've been trying to get Lee to watch it for such a long time.
Such a and Lee won't watch it.
He won't watch it.
Lee,
what is he like?
He's a heathen.
Oh, it's got puppets and shit in. Oh,
I'll tell you what. Lee's not coming back on the podcast till he's watched it. There,
yes.
I'll be that much of a dick.
Yeah. That's the tagline of the movie, by the way. It's got puppets and shit in.
Puppets and shit. Yeah, <that's... laughs> well, to be fair though, I think for the tagline for the podcast in the description, I put we're going back through a time of magic and Muppets. So, but. Yeah,
Muppets,
because I had Muppets in.
Yeah.
Say it was Jim Henson. No. So Donna's probably terrified of because she's scared of, like, say, the Muppets. But I remember reading it not too long ago that this was the movie that really kind of broke Jim Henson's heart a little bit as well because it flopped big style when it first came out. Like, it like really didn't do well as they were expecting. So when Jim Henson, like, this was like his labor of love, like when he made this movie he was like, this is going to be absolutely fantastic, this is going to blow everyone away, but no one got it at first. But you can see why when you watch it back, like I watched it yesterday, and how dark and everything it was, it's very much very of its time, but it's kind of like aged well at the same time as well.
But if you think about where it came from Henson though, Henson had just finished working on The Dark Crystal when he went into Labyrinth, and The Dark Crystal is a hell of a lot darker than Labyrinth.
Yeah.
So this was actually a lighter movie.
Mm-hmm. It's still scary, like, see when it
comes I'm not denying that. I'm just like...
I think it's the harshest threat in this is that you're going to smell bad forever. It's that weird thing where it's so kind of... You know, there is no threat. It's the idea of, yes, the baby will be taken, but he'll be raised by... The Goblin King. It's like, it's not like Dark Crystal where it's like, nope, death. Everyone dies, you know. So yeah, you're right, Sarah. It is just like going, this is a much happier movie, but maybe it's the, I think it's the tone. I think it's the colours and the tone that stop it being a happy, clappy fantasy movie, but you know.
No, I agree. And I remember, I think my earliest memories is this used to be like a bank holiday movie. used to be on every like bank holiday. Used to be every on ITV because it used to have adverts on. I remember like certain parts in the movie where the advert used to come, so you used to like recognize it because it never used to change from year to year. But I was just transfixed. There was, as Sarah said, there's certain elements in the movie that does terrify you, like the hands and the floating head guys.
Oh, yeah.
It is spooky elements. But I didn't know something until I watched it last night, and Dan actually sent us a picture as well. And it was literally the same time she sent us a picture. I was like, holy shit, it's like literally, it was like we were watching it at the same time, which was a bit scary. George Lucas, like, say, was involved with the production of this as well, which I had no idea about.
No, I didn't. No, me neither, until I saw them photos. I had no clue.
Yeah.
So
he absolutely loved it. He dove straight into this.
But yeah.
Are we right in saying it came out in 1986?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, so, right. It is the first film I ever saw at the cinema. That's how old I am.
Wow. That's amazing.
I was 6 years old. My sister was four. And I remember vaguely, it was like a really old fashioned cinema that my mum and dad took us to. And I remember my dad is a typical dad, and the bog of eternal stench, he was wetting himself. And at six, you think farting's funny. But then when you're 43 and you watch it back and you're going, they look like buttholes. And you can get it even more now, you know, like the more you look into it, the more you see. But it's the first film I ever went to see at the cinema. And I remember I really didn't like the floating heads. That was the only thing that I took away that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember thinking it was the best film I'd ever seen, because I was brought up on a diet of the Muppets. My mum said whenever I got sad, she put me in the high chair, put the Muppets on the TV and sit me in front of the TV. And I used to dance to the Muppets theme tune in the high chair. Because it was like my favourite thing. And I loved Kermit and I loved Fozzie and I loved Gonzo. Gonzo was always my favourite.
Mm-hmm.
But so like a knock-on effect from that was this movie. And if you look at the scale of the amount of puppets that were made for this.
Yeah.
You take it for granted as kids because you think that it's all real in your head. Yeah. That's happening.
That's really happening.
Yeah. And then, like, last night I was really trying to take in how much I was looking at, and Ludo alone is huge. And I don't know why my brain hadn't quantified the scale of Ludo, really, because when you remember back, I was always just like, oh, yeah, he's whatever. He's 5 foot. Everybody's 5 foot in my brain. And then, like, you see him, and he's about 6.5, 7 foot, maybe even a bit taller than that when he's fully standing up.
We were laughing when we saw, as you said, the scale of all the puppets. And one of the comments that we made, like, me and my wife made when we watched it, yes, I made her watch it as well. She wasn't very happy, but basically, if they made that movie now, they wouldn't use the puppets. It would be all kind of like CGI and like all that element. So a bit of the magic elements would be kind of lost. But we were bad at laughing at Ludo, just because when he turned around, Ludo has one of the most ridiculous arses you've ever seen. It's a proper, like, chunky, thick girl's arse as well. So it was like, Ludo's got back. And, it just, like, the sheer, like, details and the amount of stuff that went through. And, if you look at Hoggle's face as well, like, each blemish or, like, things that they made into it, like, that would have took someone hours and hours, days just to create. It's just
especially
fabulous.
especially with how underused some of them are, like the magic dance scene where it's the idea of just being like, there are how many puppets are in that room, how many goblin costumes, like, you know, you have people in costumes, you have actual puppets and stuff, and you don't get close-ups on some of them, but you know that all of that effort has gone into every single one of them. And you're like, that's like even in the goblin battle at the end, like, it literally has those three ninja, like, goblins that appear and then get hit by rocks. Those are full costumes that have been made, and they are there for one shot, and then, nope, cool. Like, it's crazy the detail that Jim Henson's Creature Workshop puts into all of these films, and you can see why he'd be devastated, because no one can accuse them of not putting passion into their project.
Jim Henson in himself was, I would almost say he was like a personification of magic, and he put it into everything that he did.
Mm-hmm. Not definitely from, like, even from
you can see why he, Yeah, mm-hmm. You can see why George Lucas and him got on, because world building, you know, who are the people we think about when we think about good world building? And you're like Jim Henson, George Lucas.
Sorry, I mean, Paul. Even if you're looking at it from world building perspectives, how many different scenes and sets must there have been to create this? They weren't recycled.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The only thing that was recycled is that bloody corridor, you know, the labyrinth one where she's running down it at the beginning. Yeah. And I'm just going, why are all these cuts really quick? Oh, it's because they only made like 5 meters of wall. And they're like, oh,
I did notice a few sketchy green screen scenes at certain points, but that was basically impossible filming of the time. As Dan said, the floating head, I can't remember what the creatures were. Sarah, do you know the name?
Fieries.
The Fieries. During that song, when they're taking each bit body parts off and stuff like that, and that got very bizarre very quickly. when the CGI it fitted in, it took you out of the illusion now, but as a kid, you wouldn't have noticed that.
It was all black suits, wasn't it? And they had the puppets on the front of the suits. Mm-hmm. And they had one person that did the mouth, mm-hmm. and somebody who was the bodies and the hands. And they did the whole routine. And I saw her behind the scenes years ago. And then I stopped being scared of the thing, of the fieries, because my brain was like, oh, they're just, you know, I knew they were puppets, but you know, when you're just like, oh, that's how it's done. So my brain now goes,
I have a Brian Connolly moment there. It's a puppet. Well,
I think that's the only bit, though. Like when we talk about, like, you know, how you would do this nowadays, you're right. It would all be CG and it would be crap, mm-hmm. you know, but it's the fact of, I think if you redid it, mm-hmm. I think, you know, that is the only real place you could improve it, like that whole scene, because it is dated, it does look dodgy, mm-hmm. but the fact is, nowadays, mm-hmm. if you just made the puppets again and did everything the same, you could just make that look perfect.
When they did the Dark Crystal TV series, I think they found a really good balance of how to mix the CG with the puppetry, and it worked really, really well. Now, I'm not saying remake Labyrinth, for God's sake, leave it alone, but like there's a way of, mm-hmm. they found, I think, the magic mm-hmm. there.
Definitely.
It didn't insult anyone.
But I mean, talking about the CGI in Labyrinth and that there, though, even though like it was, up to today's standards, it was awful CGI. The owl over the credits at the beginning mm-hmm. was the most photorealistic owl that you had ever seen on TV at the time.
Oh, 100%. And
this is like people going, graphics aren't going to get better than this in like video games in like 94. Like, I remember people being like, Alone in the Dark, it's fully 3D. And you're sitting there being like, those years when we weren't actively worrying about the machines or AI and just being like, we're a bit off.
Skynet wasn't real back then, but it is now. The one thing that always sticks out with this film as well, and I don't think it does get the credit that it probably does, is how great the story is, though, as well.
Yeah.
Because everyone goes through for the things, but if you think about it as a story, it's a very much of a coming of age, like teen drama type thing. You get the petulant little child at the start, don't want to grow up, don't want to let go, and kind of like going through this journey and turning into, like, say, a kind of like an adult in the way.
I really want to talk about this, because it's the fact of, I never realized this as a kid. Like, I never noticed any of the nuance or any of the symbolism in it. And even now, I'm not sure about most of it. Like, I'm very much kind of, this is what I think it is, but I think that's totally wrong. I mean, like, my friend Baron was talking about the novelization they released at the same time as the movie, and that adds loads of stuff in. And I was like, that totally changes how the plot is. And you know, when it's the official novelization, you just go, then it's approved. So that means that's canon, but that's not in the film, you know. But like, you know, it's the fact of, it's almost like a Studio Ghibli film. You know, all the stuff happening at the same time where they're all about sort of girls coming of age and like going through an experience that makes them learn about themselves and about the world. And obviously in this one, we kind of go, she's a right fucking brat at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then by the end, she's kind of learned about responsibility. She's learned a bit of empathy for things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's learned to like sort of appreciate her brother, and she's learned to get away from materialism, where she gives up Lancelot. She's realized that, you know, obviously we have the scene where it's just going, oh, don't forget your bag. Don't forget you know, your pop vinyl figures. Ooh, you like them, don't you? Oh, you know, your Pokemon cards. You know, and it's very much like, yeah, that's it. But, you know, it's very much that. And she's like, oh, all of this is meaningless in the face of actual, like, you know, reality and relationships. But I always interpreted it bizarrely that Jareth was a euphemism for her parents, mm-hmm. for her stepmom and stepfather, in the capacity of, you know, like the song Within You, where it's very much them going, hey, I've done everything for you, mm-hmm. But I've realized that I can't control you, I can't live within you, as in, you know how you hear about parents trying to relive their life through their kids and stuff, yeah. And that's how I interpreted that. And I think it's all bollocks. I don't think that's what they intended at all, but that's what I...
That was your interpretation of it, you know? Type thing. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Well, mine's different. I always thought, and I don't know whether I heard it somewhere years and years ago, or it was just something that I thought myself. I thought it was a fever dream. Right. I thought the whole thing was a fever dream, because when she comes back, she's been caught in the rain, she's soaking wet, she gets in, and then from the minute she gets in... It pans across every toy she owns, and then it does something which I don't know if people have picked up Sarah might have, but the scrapbook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When it pans across the scrapbook, you see lots of pictures of David Bowie in the scrapbook.
Yeah.
And then when she's sitting at the putting the lipstick on, you really didn't want to talk to me.
Yeah.
Wiping it off, there's pictures of David Bowie in her mirror.
Right.
So. Well,
it's because that he's actually dating her real mother.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's the story behind that bit. Right. The pictures of the woman that are in her scrapbook and around her mirror is her real mother, who is an actress.
Right.
And the male lead in the play that she's in is played by David Bowie in the pictures, who is apparently dating her mother.
Which is one of my reasons
as to where she got Jareth from.
Right. Because I was always under the impression, like I said, it was a fever dream, because so much of it was involved, like all of her toys, all of her trinkets, absolutely everything came up in the
everything
period of
is
the
in
film.
Room.
And yeah, and then by the end, she was just, she snapped out of it. The parents come home and she was different, you know, but she was still having a little hallucination because she had a party with them later.
Well,
so either that or she was tripping balls the entire film.
I think
she'd been out
on
the magic mushrooms down by the river.
You know, she's a teenager, you know.
But
it's that thing, though. Obviously, I made a note about the party at the end about how lovely it is that it's like, look, you're coming of age, you're growing up, you're giving up childish stuff like cosplay, because who would do that? See you next week, SunnyCon. But she's given all of this up, and then at the end, it's the idea of going, yeah, but you can still have this, like us.
Yeah.
You can still have these things that are meaningful to you. You just in moderation, and it's almost like the there's a song by the band MGMT called Kids, which is a really famous song, but it's about like. It's about the not getting trapped in nostalgia. It's about sort of, you know, going, hey, you've got to adult now. You can't just spend your whole life thinking about how you want to be a kid again, how you want to do this and things like that. So I kind of like that she has the party at the end where she's like, oh, I've got to adult, but fuck it, cosplay, you know, fuck it. Like, you know, all my fantasy mates, you know.
I did spend at least 4 years after watching that movie in waistcoat and shirts and jeans.
Oh, please tell me you've got some photographs.
There is, not on me. There is photographic evidence, but yeah, I used to love a waistcoat.
I'm surprised you haven't got the picture of me when I dressed up as Jareth Paul.
Oh, I'm not. I'll be honest, I've had a bit of a shit day today. I haven't had a chance to run around. I've had a bit of a family drama. But anyway, that's beyond the end. So I've not managed to do as much as I possibly could today. So I was going to fuck a lot of people up today, but yeah. But no,
we can do that when we come back from SunnyCon.
Yes.
Woohoo!
But I love that, like, one movie, like, different people can get so many different perspectives from it, though. That's why I love having these type of conversations. Because the way Dan described it as well, that just blew my fucking mind. Like, I totally see that now after seeing that movie. Like, the response is, The only thing that did throw me again last night, because when they were going through like the start, when she was going through her room, you saw the toys, you saw the Wizard of Oz book, you saw Disney Snow White. You used the word Disney. I was like, oh, has Disney got something to do with this? But then in the scrapbook, it had the sexiest fox in the world as well. It had the Robin Hood's fox from the Disney film. I was like,
yeah,
Foxy Fox.
I was like, has Disney got? Did Disney have something to do with this? Or because I know later on they had something to do with. Jim Henson, but I didn't know if they had something to do at that time it was made.
That fox is responsible for a lot of furries.
Right.
That is...
Zididymus. Like,
wow.
Zididymus, wasn't it? Oh, no, the fox from the Robin
actual,
Hood.
Yeah. Yeah, the actual Robin Hood Disney one was in the scrapbook.
Yeah.
Right.
Some very confused people out there after that movie.
For a lot of different reasons there. Like I say,
it was an awakening for most of our generation, I would say.
Yes. Oh, that's a good word, awakening. I like that.
So I know, like, Sammy, so when did you first see the
I can't remember.
Right.
But it has to be probably at my granddad's house. Yeah. It's where I saw all of, you know, my... anything fantasy style my granddad would have it on. I don't have the biggest love of this movie like everybody else does, I think, but it's only because I have a bit of a fear of this style of movies.
Right.
The Dark Crystal probably created that fear and led into this one. It's the aesthetic of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be there badly, but I don't. It's kind of like my feverish nightmare place to be. Mm-hmm. So I've never really gravitated towards the love that everyone else has. However, I appreciate this movie for everything it brings. Like, if I'm sorry to mention it, but when we do Monsters, we talk about the background work of what goes into creating these practical pieces. And I fucking love the practicality of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely warms my heart and blows my mind. Like when Dan mentioned earlier about how many people were like mastering these puppets, like, oh my God, that really, really excites me, probably in a way that shouldn't. But I just...
We found a new fetish for Sam now, so...
You really like puppets.
I really like puppets.
That's it.
Puppetry.
Really enjoy a man's hand being right up.
Do you know, my husband has been messaging me, and he knows I can't message back because I'm using my phone, and he's been messaging me some of the worst facts about, like, did you know Jennifer Connelly was 16 years old? Take that in, Sam. 16 years old.
15, I believe.
He's actually watching it because he's just said, you're not saying much. So he's watching it.
But I think the weirdest thing mentioning that, though, it's the fact of I was told that basically, like, there was a scene where, like, Jareth is meant to kiss Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And Bowie refused to do it because the actress was 15. Yeah, but that was a story, and he was like, no. So I think it was like in the novelization that Jareth has an attraction to Sarah, but then Bowie totally played it as a very standoffish way because he was like, no, this is not how I'm doing the character.
Yeah,
which is good for Bowie, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And apparently Michael Jackson was in the running to play Jareth as well, so that could have ended differently.
Oh, okay.
There was a few people in for that. I believe it was Sting and Mick Jagger as well were also four rows for that.
I was joking about Mick Jagger, and then I was like, no, please. No. But I can bet it's a thing.
Dance, Sting.
The entire thing is just the Dancing in the Streets video. And he just...
I can't take another Jumpin' Jack Flash, to be honest. But yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh. Well, yeah. But, oh, Mick Jagger, that would have been horrible.
How did you discover the movie, Sarah?
I was only three when it came out, but I know it wasn't long after that I did see it. I think I was about six, so I'm looking at about 1989 when I first saw it. And I think it was one of those bank holiday TV specials that I actually saw it on. And you know what? It was just, I immediately loved it. I just fell in love with it straight away, and you know, it's always been the same since.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you why. It's just up on a pedestal for me.
That's the joy of nerdness, though, where it's the idea of just like, we have this stuff and we're like, I just love this.
There's no explanation for it. Yeah. I couldn't tell you why. I have certain movies like that where I just can't tell you why, but I just do. Mm-hmm. And
I've bought the movie so many times. I had it on VHS, I had it on DVD, I bought it on Blu-ray, I bought it on the 4K stuff. I bought anniversary editions, special editions. I named my first car Jareth.
I thought you were going to say child there. I was like, okay.
not yet. But just a quick question as well, because you said you got it in 4K. Does Bowie's Bulge grows in 4K, or does it stay the normal size through the different versions?
It's in high def.
Oh, wow.
So put your eye out as well.
Can I just say that was done deliberately as well by people who were dressing him?
Really? That was they deliberate enhanced thing?
It. It was a deliberate choice.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was rumours for years, and we've made jokes about this on the podcast before, is that there's always been rumours that it was digitally enhanced, like depending on which version of the movie you got throughout the years, like from the VHS to the DVD. They probably just cleaned it up a little bit there. But I know... Graham's got a good friend who likes to cosplay as Jareth. Well, so I can get the picture up if you like.
Baron.
Oh, yeah. I've mentioned it's the picture up.
I'll put it up now. This, there, so.
I've mentioned them early on today, but this is my friend Baron LeVay, who you may know from Star Trekking with Nerdy Up North, because we had them on as a guest. And they do an amazing, as you can see, Jareth cosplay. And they've done this at conventions. They've done this on TikTok. Follow them on TikTok. They've done a lot of little skits and stuff as Jareth. And it's absolutely amazing, because it's like, hold on. It hasn't shown me the picture yet. It hasn't come up on... I haven't caught up on YouTube.
It's just come up on the...
It just come up. Okay. Yeah, cool. Okay, cool. No, hang on. No, Paul. Show me. I want to see the real picture.
That is the real picture?
No, show me the real picture.
That's the one you sent me. I'm confused there.
The closer one.
Oh, I'm not. I can't close. Oh, do you want a close up there?
Yeah, go on. Show me the real picture. We need to do the X-Men thing where it's like, no, I want to see the real thing.
This.
I'd be like,
I was confused. Perfection. I was like, what have I done wrong now? But yes.
But yeah, how good
I
is that
Graham's
cosplay?
Assistance. No, Paul, the real picture.
The real. Show me the real picture. I just love it being that X-Men bit. Right. But it's the fact of like, it's such a hilarious thing is that bulge there. I did a talk. Me and Baron LeVay went into Newcastle College, Newcastle Sixth Form College, to speak to the students about sort of drag and their sexuality and whatnot. And this was the picture they used for Baron LeVay, and it was on a massive projector screen behind me. So I was literally sitting there with this bulge like above my head, being like, please take what I'm saying seriously. Also,
just tapping you on the head.
That's it. Oh, it's slapping me. It likes me. But
good boy.
But how good is that cosplay?
It is a very good cosplay. Follow them. But yes, I don't think I could pull off anything as eloquent as that. I probably could pull off Ludo, or even like say getting a Hoggle outfit. That would be quite entertaining. But
actually, I think Baron is going to be at SunnyCon this weekend.
Oh wow!
Yeah, they're going to be at SunnyCon this weekend with a new Jareth cosplay, because I know they're working on it. And that's the outfit that we get during Magic Dance, and I think where he appears to her, you know, later on. I think.
At the ball scene.
Is it the ball?
That ball scene.
But the new one that they're doing is the beginning one where he Jareth, you know, androgynous Jareth appears like in
where
the bedroom.
First appear.
So it's basically got the massive collar on and stuff, and it's awesome. Like very black. I didn't realize it had bones on. They were telling me that it basically the cuirass basically has a bones on, and the costume designer said in an interview that they represent the bones of the children that didn't get turned into goblins. And you're like, okay.
That wasn't the film I got there.
I don't think it's canon. I think it's literally the costume designer just being like, when I made this, that's what I intended.
Choices.
So going about the characters that's in it, because as we said before, there is quite a lot of memorable characters in this, even like some of the part like little cameos and stuff. Who were your favorite characters in the movie? We'll go with Sammy first there, because she looked like she was going to speak.
Sorry, I just was thinking, oh, Udo sad. No, it's the little, oh gosh, there's so many. The little caterpillar.
Little worm.
The little worm is a little worm. Hello.
Hello.
Just, yay! That's amazing, Sarah.
Come in. Oh, have a cup of tea. Come on.
You don't
meet the missus.
You don't want to go that way. You want to go that way.
Don't go that way. This way.
Oh, if she took that way, she would have gone right to the Goblin King's castle.
To be fair, it would have been a shorter movie, to be fair. Yeah.
It would have. I absolutely love the little worm. The colours on that worm, like, it was just, they're amazing. I think he's so cute. There is a couple that I do like. There's a couple of the goblins I like as well. I think they're class. Proper little scrunchy faces. That's mine.
What about you, Dan? Serious look.
Pondering.
I can't say I do like specifically any of them over any of them. I like Ludo because he was like, I don't know, you expect something big to be ferocious and mean, and she saved him and he's not, and he calls rocks. I mean, where did that come from? You know, of all the things that Ludo could do, he calls rocks.
It's a special
rocks friends.
Yeah, but it was just, of all the things that, if you go into that film and you've never seen it and you thought, okay, what's Ludo gonna, you know, his thing gonna be? Calling rocks wasn't there on the top of my list, you know.
I think that's why I love about fantasy, though. It gives you that option to literally do anything. It's like, how do we get out of this situation? Fuck it, he can talk to rocks.
Yeah, there is one other. There's a goblin in the dance magic dance scene trying to catch a chicken with a net, right? And that is my favourite in that scene because he spends the entire time trying to stick that chicken in a net, a real chicken.
Yeah.
And he's got like a long fishing net and it's behind David the whole time, and he's trying to loop this chicken. Chicken's having none of it.
I love the whole thing of like the random chickens in all of the goblin scenes. Like, where it has the goblin fight at the end, and they're just running around, and you're like, what the fuck must these chickens? The chickens have thought was going on.
Why do they have so many chickens?
Yeah, well, chickens were harmed in the making of this movie.
There was loads of random animals. Like we were watching the scene last night, and there was like a random cat just walking along the street, and it was like in the Goblin City. Like, there's a cat, and that was just its one and only appearance. But there was loads of live animals used. And like no puppeteers, like when the crows were on the tree, you think, oh, there might be like robotic crows, but no, there were actually live crows jumping along the branches and stuff, which I thought was a nice little touch. Yes. What about you, Sarah?
Choosing my favorite child.
Oh wow.
I mean, there's a couple that I really like. I always enjoy like any scene with Didymus and Ambrosius in.
Yes.
But probably my most quoted character in the movie is after they leave the tunnels where the cleaner is, and they climb up out of the pot, and they meet the old man with the turkey hat, and it's like, woo, woo, woo. It's so stimulating being your hat.
Yeah, that's it. He's just like, oh, it's so lovely. It's that perfect voice.
That is probably my most quoted character. That one. So I'm probably going to say him.
Cool, very nice. What about you, Graham? Please don't say the bulge.
That's not a character. It's just an important part of one. I'm the same as Dan. I don't really particularly have any love for any specific characters in this. I don't think that any of the characters are like lovable per se. Like Ludo's cute, but he's not pretty. You know, it's a difficult film, and obviously, like Sarah's a bitch for the majority of it.
Absolutely.
You know,
I thought you were talking about me there.
I'll call you Peachy so we don't come in. And then obviously Bowie's weird because like Jareth's like intentions are very strange in this. Like that's why it makes me think he's an allegory. He's basically, you know, he's not a consistent character. He's basically just saying things. And I don't know if that's bad writing, but I think my favorite characters in it are all of the Terry Jones bits. Like all of the bits we're referencing, you can tell that Monty Python, like Terry Jones and Monty Python wrote the first version of this script because...
Yeah, screenplay, like, wasn't it?
Yeah, because all the, like, my favorite things are just the randomness, like the heads, the random hand heads, that's genius. Like you're saying, the guy's hat, where he's just like, oh, it's so stimulating being your hat. And then, well, what's my favourite one? The bit where, yeah, the worm obviously is a very Terry Jones. And then the, what's it called? The rocks that are trying to warn her. And they're like, no, go back. And then it's just got the one where it's just like,
destruction.
Yeah, it's got that one thing. No, and he's like, shut up. And he's like, oh, come on. You know, oh, I've been waiting ages to say this. And it's literally, it's the humour that I grew up with, where it's this, like, totally drops the character and it's just a rock in a Yorkshire accent being like, sort of, no, go on. You know, it's, that's the stuff that makes me like, and the little brick, you know, where the stones are getting turned around, where she's writing directions on the stones. And there's just this little guy who comes out and he's like,
your mother is a freaking aardvark.
That's it. And these things, and then the goblins in the city, it's got a goblin who is a turret. It literally, it's like, hang on. And it's got a goblin who is a cannonball. And you're like, why does the goblin need to be in the cannonball?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like, it doesn't do anything.
When it fires and doesn't go anywhere, it goes, I just fired you. And it's like hopping around mad. And it's like,
yeah. We've got the other one where it fires it, it gets lodged in the wall. And he's like, I think I hit something. And it's just like, well, you know, that's what I like about it. All the stuff I love is all of the stuff in the just random Muppets going around just and shit.
No, similarly, there's so much to love about the characters, but the ones that stand out are the ones only get like a little time, but they kind of stay in your memory. Like the bit in when Sarah's got Tobin in her arms and she's like, "I wish," and then all the goblins are in the cupboard. And they're going, has he said it yet? And he's going, shh. And he's going, like all the faces and stuff, and like the big bulging eyes, it just draws you out. And like, as you said before, the trash woman at the end, she's going, oh, look at these. This and so, listen, you like this, don't you? Oh, you remember this?
It's like, you like your Warhammer, don't you?
But it's a film that shouldn't work in ways, because it is just batshit crazy. But I think in the fantasy realm, it ticks so many right boxes and ticks everything that you kind of want in the film. But I think, as Sammy said, it's either going to be like a Marmite movie. I don't know many people that just think, oh, I like Labyrinth. I've watched it. I've seen it. I really love it, or it's not for them. So it's always been that middle ground type thing.
Yeah.
I have to say, I don't think it's a very narratively strong movie. That is my hot take I will do. I think it's a brilliant movie, but when we talk about the story, I don't think the story is particularly good. It's a more a kind of cool events falling through the cool events, you know. And if that was in an action film, you would criticize it. You know, I would criticize it. But the fact is, because there's so much going on and so much to see, I think it's brilliant. Like, for instance, the Fieries bit, the whole scene with the Fieries bit, narratively means nothing. It's literally just they just appear and I that's my least favorite scene, even though it's brilliant. But it's because the song the Fieries sing, like Chilly Down, is all about like getting used to apathy and inaction and, you know, like laziness, like, you know, like they're effectively like stoners being like, oh, you don't need to worry about your brother, just chill out kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of route that you could go down as a teenager rather than accepting your responsibilities. And that could be far more apparent. It could literally just have a scene with dialogue between her and them where they're actively going, hey, you don't need to find your brother, you know, slow down kind of thing. But instead, they just appear. They do a crazy song. She runs away from them, and that's that. And you're like going, it was cool, but narratively, what? I don't know. Do you agree, Sarah, or do you totally disagree?
I can see what you mean. I find it hard to see like the lack of that in it. But I think that's just because
it's one of your favorite
movies. Having it on a pedestal. Me personally, I think that scene is just kind of like hinting at some of the strange and weird and wonderful creatures that she could have met and has probably met in the journey through it.
It's almost like it's, you know, because like, I know, like, say they make reference to it at the start with like the book there being Wizard of Oz. It's like Jim Henson's version of the Wizard of Oz, if he got to like remake it and just make it as weird and wonderful as it is. It's just like, instead of following the yellow brick road, just going through the labyrinth and meeting all these different things that could appear. Sometimes to me, and I think me and Sammy's had this conversation as well, I like when things don't get over explained, I like to use my own imagination and to think of likewise, like again, going back on probably an episode that we'll talk about in the future, like the Michael Myers aspect. I don't need to know why he kills people. I don't need to know why he's evil. I like the
fact Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
Far too much character explanation.
Yeah. But that kind of aspect is always like either a little more scary for me and I'll enjoy it more that way. But like this, it's kind of like, oh, Sarah's going on a journey and these creatures are just like around like in the areas and just trying to, and the songs are just something that's like, say, like doesn't really need to be there, but they are fucking catchy as fuck as well. Like Boy was
on. I have and of course on my playlist still. Like
I do. This here is one of my most prized possessions.
Right, yes, you've
got the album cover as well.
I've got the album, and it's a beautiful lavender disc as well.
It's
one of my most prized possessions. This thing.
But it's so good, the soundtrack. Like, it's the fact of the instrumentals, like, the actual score is so good. And it's all, like, Bowie and... Oh, who's the other guy? Sorry, it'll be on the back, won't it?
Trevor Jones.
Yeah. Fuck. Oh, no. Really?
Trevor Jones did a lot of the music for it.
Oh, I'm thinking of Trevor Horn, sorry. But, no, and it's crazy, but it's like... I mean, one of my biggest complaints about the film is how good Underground is, and you barely hear it.
You barely get
like a verse at the beginning, and it just jumps straight into it. I'm like, no, just play the whole song.
You've got to go through the credits at the end to get most of that.
Yeah, and I'm like, damn it, it's so good.
Oh, I was waiting for someone to start singing. Thank you, Dan.
I sung before we went live. You've had mine.
But not to be fair, like I say, we've got an hour into it, and it's the first time we've had someone sing yet, so we've done well.
It leads me to the relevance of the Escher painting thing that they do. I mean, if it wasn't a fever dream, please someone explain that to me.
No, I took this as meaning adulting, where the fact is it doesn't make sense. It's like
it's complex.
Yeah, it's this idea of like, and it's the whole point of it. It's not straightforward. There isn't an actual solution to it. But you still need to do it. You still need to progress. And that's how I would describe adult life. It's like we have in Star Trek, where you have the, Goodwill will kill me for this, but it's a Japanese word, but it's basically it means like the unwinnable scenario.
Kilmashi Maroon.
Yeah, where it's that's it. But you have to accept you're not going to get out of this unscathed. And that's what I took the Escher painting to be, where the only way she solves it is by taking a risk. She jumps and it plays out, but it might not have, and that's adulting, you know.
It's kind of like taking that leap into the unknown.
Yeah,
I still find that about adulting.
If you don't take risks, you're not going to get anywhere. That's like, this is what I said to the students like on Thursday when I was like giving my life advice. Kobayashi Maru, yeah, there we go. Thanks, Google. But I was giving life advice, and I'm like, don't be afraid to fuck up, because you're going to, and it's not the end of the world. Every decision doesn't need to be right first time. And that's what she does. She has to make a leap of faith, and it pays off, but it might not have done. That's growing up.
But that's just like everything, like, say, even with this podcast like type thing, we've done like over 100 and something episodes. And like when even Samuel say at the start, we were sketchy as fuck when we did it. We're still sketchy as fuck, but at least we actually don't give as much of a fuck, but we actually enjoy it.
Yeah, we don't give a shit now. We don't give a shit. Can I ask a question? Does anyone else, did anyone else just want to leave the brother there?
Yeah.
Because that kid was annoying, mate. I'm not gonna lie.
Who was it? It was Jessica, like Jessica, who's a regular on the Monsters Up North with you guys, as well as this. They were saying that like Toby the kid pissed on David Bowie at one point during filming.
Because she mentioned because
Toby Froud, who now works at Jim Henson's company. Because
he's so sweet.
I think his dad was involved with Jim Henson at the time of making the movie, and that is why he ended up in the movie. But yes, he actually did a lot of work on the new Dark Crystal stuff as well.
My little sister was so obsessed with this film. David Bowie was her first crush.
Right.
And she was fascinated with his heterochromia because he's got two different eyes. And so when it came to naming her kids, two of them sound like they're part of the Italian mafia, but she's got a Toby as well. Yeah. And he was named after Labyrinth. So you've got Ronnie and Frankie. And then you've got
Toby.
And then Toby. So
I thought you were going to say she named one of them Hetero and one of them
Chromio.
It's just like, oh, well done, Chromio. Well done, yeah. Hetero. And actually, I'm gay. Shut up, Hetero.
The irony.
Rebellious kids.
Dan said something quite interesting earlier as well, because I know this has been talked about many times throughout the years. Leave It Alone regarding a remake, which I completely agree with. I don't think this film needs to be remade. The only thing I did wonder if this film, because as you said, it didn't do well. If it did do well, do you think we would have got more Labyrinth movies after this, just because of the work they put in to build the world, to build the creatures that was part of it as well?
Did they do sequels much? Like, I don't think Jim Henson ever wanted sequels. Well, they were like, oh, we did this thing, did they?
There was a lot of manga style like graphic novels as well of Harry and on after the Sarah incident, or how Jareth came to be as well. There are those out there, so there have been like other stories told about it. But I mean, as of 2020, they were technically still working on a sequel.
No,
they were.
Not a reboot, a sequel.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually working with the Henson family on it to try and keep everything like within the vision.
Right.
And the last I heard, it was Scott Derrickson was down to direct.
Okay.
Who I think he did Doctor Strange.
Right. Which Doctor Strange? The original.
Which Doctor Strange?
Sam Raimi did that.
Yeah. Raimi, wasn't
he? But
I knew it was connected to Doctor Strange. I just couldn't remember which one.
I think it'd be interesting because it's difficult because there's not a good track record with Jim Henson's Creature Workshop with these things. Like with the Dark Crystal series, I thought that was really good. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Amazing.
And I have to admit, it did kind of spoil the original a little bit for me, knowing that there's extra elements of the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the fact it got cancelled is shocking. Like the fact you're just going...
They cancelled it, yeah. I was absolutely devastated.
Got a hell of a reaction, though.
No,
it was money.
Didn't make money.
It was the most expensive TV show that was made for Netflix, I think. Because of the sheer production and everything.
Yeah.
It was costing like a couple of million per episode.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's one of those movies that I want to love, but I can't get around the Skeksis, and I don't think I ever will. That's such a shame. Because I have a lot of friends who love Dark Crystal, and they were like so excited about it. And they were going to had workshops and everything set up for it. Mm-hmm. I had no idea it was cancelled. That's so sad. Yeah.
The Dark Crystal is actually my second favorite movie.
I'm noticing a pattern here.
I know Simon Pegg did one of the voices for one of the Skeksis in the TV show.
He did the
Chamberlain, was it?
The Chamberlain. So many good voices in there, because you had like Lena Headey as well, and Eddie Izzard, and there was loads of people in it.
It's funny
though, because Sarah, you're saying about like they're still working on the same, because I've heard names being bounded around to play the Bowie character as well. I think Tilda Swinton was the last one.
Don't get me wrong, she is fantastic in Constantine. In all the gender swap movies she does amazing. But I'm just at a point now where it feels like we're just going to throw her in for the sake of it, because she does it so well.
Tilda Swinton might be my favorite actress. I genuinely adore Tilda Swinton, and I think they'd be good as like Jareth in it, but can we not just
invent
not
a
touch
new character?
Things? Yeah, can we just like not bring Jareth back and go, hey, here's the world, but here's Jareth's son or daughter, or
that's what I mean, Graham. In my head, the world of the Labyrinth, the Jareth that we see in the movie is not the first Jareth and will not be the last Jareth.
Yeah.
I think it's a line of Jareths.
A line of Jareth.
To be fair, with his bull, he could have laid a good seed. So yes.
Well, that's exactly the basis of that, isn't it?
I mean, he demonstrates that he's got balls in quite a few scenes, you know, and he throws them about quite a lot, you know.
Yes. But,
almost throws them as high as he does Toby in Dance Magic Dance. Yeet that baby in the air.
Yeah. You remind me of the babe.
What babe?
The babe with the power.
What power?
The power of voodoo.
Voodoo?
You do.
Do what?
Remind you of babe. Remind you of babe.
Oh,
so close.
Did you?
Blah.
Oh, but did
my
you
baby.
Know?
That's all my baby.
Oh my God.
It's gone a bit Louis Armstrong, actually.
I thought my babe had gone. It's gone a bit Geordie and Louis Armstrong all mixed in the one.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
That's not a 100% original song, you know.
Is it not?
No.
Oh, here's Sarah's breaking illusions now. Oh, my God.
Come on with the facts.
It's from a movie.
A movie
in 1947 called The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer.
Right.
And there's a scene where one character says, "Hey, you remind me of a man." And the other person goes, "What man?" The man with the power. What power? The power of hoodoo.
You do?
Hoodoo, you do. Do what? Remind me of a man.
All right. So Bowie rips someone off.
The bloody thieves!
How dare you!
Plagiarism at its finest.
We've got to think about, like, a lot. Bowie took a lot of drugs. So this whole thing, like, my favorite Bowie album is actually his craziest, which is like Number One Outside, which came out in 1994, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely crazy. And all of the lyrics are just him just coming up with mad stuff. And they recorded for like hours at a time with just improvising and him just spieling off random stuff and then bringing it into a narrative in editing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you just, and his way of doing things, he'd do lyrics where he'd just write down phrases, put them into a hat, pull them out, and he'd be like, "Okay, here are the lyrics." So, you know, it would be like he'd write a line and then he'd pull out another one and be like, "Oh, cool," and then rearrange them into like lyrics. Mm-hmm. So you got songs that everyone's attributing meaning to, and he's like, "These are random words, like lines I pulled out of a hat." So it makes sense that he would put film lines in and stuff and be like, "Yeah, I'm just going to reference that, and oh, I'm going to do that." And yeah, I mean, he probably didn't know the internet was going to come when we could research it and be like, "Oh, look, there's a film from 1940s. He's like,
"How dare you?"
You know, all right. I hope I'm dead when Sarah points that out on a podcast.
Yes. No, I think at the time when we got this movie as well, as you mentioned, Dark Crystal, but we did get a lot of different fantasy heroes around. Like, one of my other favourites is Legend with the Scientologist superstar he is, Tom Cruise. But
You've invoked them now.
Yes.
You've invoked them.
Oh, no, they're watching.
You say them three times and they turn up in their blockbuster uniforms at your house. Don't you? I've warned you. I have warned you. We do not say that name out loud.
Yes. Do you know what? Mm-hmm. It was actually being filmed at the same studio as Labyrinth at the same time. And the cast used to actually lunch together. So you now have the image of David Bowie dressed as... Jareth having lunch with Darkness.
Oh, if they haven't got that picture, that would be amazing.
That's crazy, though, that those two iconic films like were done at the same time. It's like, you know, we wax lyrically about how wonderful the 80s were, and you just like, it's brilliant. Like, you know, the amount of crazy stuff that happened, you know?
And I love the way you put it as well earlier, the risks they took in the 80s, it wasn't about, as you said, making a franchise. I think we did this at the SunnyCon like last year, where we had the conversation about 80s versus 90s movies. In the 90s movies, they were looking for the next franchise, the next big movie thing, next things to move on. The 80s, they were just wanted to tell good stories and just put something on film where the imagination could go wild at times. Mm-hmm. And just, like I say, it was such a free and exciting time for a lot of different things, and that's why the 80s for me will always be the best movies, especially with having the greatest movie of all time, The Goonies.
Which is a hell of a risk, because that movie is insane. Like The Goonies, where you just go, "Okay, guys, some kids get kidnapped by genuine criminals And then they find a pirate ship full of gold.
Called
and
One you're like, going,
what? Yeah, it's called One Eye Willy. Try suggesting that in a movie with kids nowadays.
I still love Josh Brolin's story about that. I don't know whether you guys covered it on the
oh, please tell podcast. It. I tell it, please.
Where he bombed down the water slide into that final one, the final scene. Mm-hmm. And none of the kids knew about mm-hmm. the ship. And so he comes bombing down, and he goes in the water, and they pre-warned him before they said go. Mm-hmm. Just react. We want your first reaction. And he popped up and he went, fuck me, that's a big ship. And so they had to retake Josh Brolin coming down the slide to get a different reaction because he swore. So he was just like, because he wasn't expecting it at all. And it was his genuine reaction. I've seen interviews with him saying, like, I ruined the first take, and they were so pissed off because they couldn't capture my initial, like,
reaction.
Because I was like, fuck me.
I knew about the kids not being shown the ship before, yeah. So you generally got the, I think we covered that, but I didn't know he'd done that. So that's just me.
Yeah.
I need to do another Goonies episode. Get Dave on.
Oh, Dave will tell everybody they're wrong about everything because he's so convinced that he is the number one fan. I'm your number one fan. But yeah, he is. I went past the soundstage. We weren't allowed in because they were filming it when we went to Warner Brothers Studios. Mm-hmm. And they have a big plaque on it, which is their water stage. But when you see it from outside, it doesn't look that big.
Yeah.
When you see it in the movie, it fit a pirate ship, 11 million tons of water or something absolutely obscene. Mm-hmm. All that water slide bit, the rocks. And you're thinking to yourself,
wow.
Logistic-wise, how the hell?
Yeah. I have noticed recently on TikTok that a lot of people, like on my For You page, are visiting the set, like the houses of the Goonies. And I'm like, has he infiltrated my TikTok somehow? Like, how has he done this? Why am I seeing this?
Goonies is life. That's what it is. But yes, I'm going to have to revisit the Goonies now. Yes, that's something that will get... Because I think last time it was just me and you that did it, Sam. So I would like to get some other people's perspectives on the greatest movie that was ever made. But yes. And I have tried to email in Sean Astin as well to ask him to come on. So them emails are getting sent as we speak.
I know that Andy, you know the lady that played Andy, she's actually doing Northern Ireland, Monopoly's Northern Ireland Comic Con. Mm-hmm. And we're all gutted because it's like... It's too far for us to go because we can't, you know, logistically, it's crazy. But I was just like, of all the shows, they could have chosen.
They chose that one.
Great for Northern Ireland. You know, I'm so happy you've got her. But like, on a long list of people I would have liked to have met, cast from the Goonies is up there. But to be fair, I see Sean Austin quite a lot at shows. So he was...
Oh, well.
Sean, hello.
He put me off when he was singing James Blunt the other time I saw him. So I was just like, He was walking past to the audience and he went, everybody, you know this song, join in. You're beautiful. And us Brits were all just looking at him going...
I still would have got on board. I don't care. I would have done Goonie for life.
Everybody was just like giving him the proper like... Yeah. We don't like James. We don't talk about James Blunt. He's funny.
Hi.
But we always laugh about because if we ever did James Blunt,
you just yell back, "You're a Gamgee."
Yeah, we always said if we got John Astin on the podcast, I would not allow Sammy to mention Lord of the Rings. We would only be able to talk about the Goonies.
We said what?
We would
said what?
There would be no talk of Lord of the Rings shite with Sean Astin. Sorry.
If you go back to that episode, I did not fucking agree to the whole Goonies thing.
I said I would fight
for the Rings.
I think we could definitely mention one of his lesser films like the Goonies. But I think we should also mention...
Nice
like,
one.
Well, let's not forget the pinnacle of Sean Austin's career, which was... As we know it, California Man, as the rest of the world, Encino Man. But, you know, that was the
thing.
We
don't know where Encino is.
This is the thing, though. It's like, what's that meme? I've seen a meme where it's basically just when, you know, like when someone references, oh, Sean Austin, oh, the guy from Stranger Things. And you're like, fuck off. You know, fuck off, right? That's either him from the Goonies or Samwise.
Oh, he was in Toy Soldiers, which people forget about that movie.
Magic.
And that was Andrew Divoff was the bad guy in that. And then you had Sean Austin, you had Will Wheaton, Quill Wheaton, and you had Heath Coogan from Adventures in Babysitting as well. Brad, he was in that. So it was like that. I love that film.
That's another episode. I'll have to do. Yeah,
that's an,
all-time favorite film. Adventures in Babysitting is my all-time favorite film. And last year, Dave and Leslie went to Rhode Island Comic Con, and they met them all. They met Elizabeth Shue. I've met Keith before because I was lucky enough. He did the show a couple of years ago, and so I met Keith, and that was I probably the first time in years I ever got starstruck by somebody. And I just stood there, and he's going, your mate told me you sung at his birthday party, because I did. I sung in Babysitting Blues because I did a turn for him. And I just went, words left the building. I left the building. I was just like a shell, just standing there going, and because it was just, it's always been my absolute favourite film. So,
I'm going to have to sort something out for you, Dan. Don't worry. We'll sort something out with that one. But yes, Labyrinth. Sorry, I've got off chatting it. So everyone liked Labyrinth. Sorry.
Everyone liked Labyrinth, and The Goonies is still an RA film.
No, I'm going to say
The Goonies is a great film. It's just not the greatest film ever, Paul.
Oh, bless you, Graham. It was nice knowing you. You're being cancelled.
Yeah, well, someone's already said in the chat, what is it? Oh, it's good seeing Graham's last episode of Nerdy Up North.
He's always welcome on Monsters.
I will say that I do agree with Graham, though. I mean, I like the film, and it has fond memories, and it's very nostalgic, and I'm quite protective over the fact I don't want anybody to remake it. However, like you say, the whole story is about a child kidnapper and a girl trying to go 78 miles in 13 hours, and then he drops a couple of hours off through these really, really ridiculous, you know, set of circumstances to get her brother back. And in the end, she just puts him in bed with a teddy and then flucks back off in a bedroom. It's like,
did she really have to go through all that? Could she not have just left him there?
Well, why didn't she pick him up and comfort him at the very first, at the beginning, instead of kept screaming, it's so unfair?
But it's because I'll disagree, but it's because it's a coming of age. It's the fact of, like, the adventure she goes through is how she becomes that at the end. But it's the idea of just, it's a bit sort of thrown through scenes. But I guess, to be fair, it's under 2 hours long. I genuinely always thought it was like 2.5 hours or something. And then watching it, I was like, this needs more scenes. Like, I genuinely was watching it being like, this would be a better film.
You should film your own scenes and add it to it.
No, I was joking about this with someone the other day. I think, who was it? About the idea of just filming things that should have been in movies and just being like, oh, okay, but doing them as crap as possible, like as in the worst possible, like, special effects, you know. Yeah. Anyway,
very good. Yes.
Oh, just by the way, just to prove my love.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, I forgot I had that t-shirt on there.
Because it was called Adventures with Babysitting in the UK, but what was it called in America? It was called something different.
A Night on the Town.
Night on the Town. That was it, yeah. Sorry. Sarah, with you being the Uber Labyrinth fan, is there anything you want to add before we wrap it up there?
Oh, a short one.
You did it, Sarah! Well done!
I've just
scared the shit out of the dogs.
There's loads of stuff we can still talk about, if I'm perfectly honest.
I've got my notes.
So fill us with your notes then, Sarah.
I mean,
you put her on the spot now.
Can we talk about the ballroom scene?
The nun scene.
Well, to be fair, isn't the ballroom scene the only scene in the movie with no Muppets in it?
Yeah. It's creepy at times. It's a creepy film.
I'm not going to deny any of that side, but I would like to approach the scene as somebody who was once a teenage girl.
Right.
Yeah.
So sorry.
The dog agrees, though. That's fine.
I'm so sorry. Coco.
The dog's like, I'm getting the word.
the worst part about it is she starts. The three of them start. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Carry on.
I'm being quoted in the chat, sorry. No, the thing is, yes, I know it can be seen as a very odd scene between a man of Bowie's age and a girl of Sarah's age, as what she was in the movie. But I've got a bit of a controversial opinion on that side of things. I would like to think that it was looked at more as the teenage girl's fantasy.
Yeah.
Right.
Because going from it, I mean, think about back when you were a teenager, Sammy, you, Dan, I mean, Graham and Paul even as well, were your crushes older than you?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. No, I think, I think you're totally right. Yeah. It's very much that,
from my point of view, there was always like the daydream of being whisked away by one of your crushes, which would have been dodgy as hell if you were 13 and they were 33.
Yeah,
that's what the Baron said the novel does, where basically it's she has a massive crush on her
mother's boyfriend.
New boyfriend, uh-huh. Who's like this actor played by David Bowie. That's why she's got the scrapbook. That's why she's got the pictures. And this is basically her coming of age thing of basically, you know, like, obviously the hot guy in her fantasy is the mum's boyfriend who she's got a crush on. And I think that's it. From that angle, there's nothing wrong with it. It's the fact that she has a crush on him and that this is what she wants. But then I think because Bowie wouldn't play it that way, it comes across as a bit more weird and standoffy.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, I always saw it as like a father-daughter dance, though. Mm. Like, I didn't see it as anything.
I think that's how Bowie puts it across.
You know? I've never saw anything sort of sexualized about it. Other than, if you look at it, the age is a bit weird. But, like, it seemed more like she was searching for him because in her head, by him doing what he's done, she's perceiving it as him caring or giving her attention. And she's clearly attention starved at home because her mum, a stepmom and her dad are always going out or whatever that setup was about. So by him doing what he's doing, he's showing her affection or attention that she's not been getting. So her chasing him around the room for me was like looking at it from a psychology point of view, was her seeking the attention she needs. And when she gets it, she doesn't want it. Yeah. Because it doesn't feel right. And then that's when she leaves the bubble, you know. So, I mean, I don't want to look into it too deep because it's just a film with puppets. But, you know, in the same vein.
One of the greatest films ever. Yeah. Oh, fuck it. It's just a film with puppets.
It's just kind of like going back to like that viewpoint that the whole film is basically taking place inside her head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And absolutely everything.
Now, like, I know it's... I've watched the movie so many times a year, and Dan's like explained it earlier, and I was like, "Shit, I've got a whole different perspective to this movie now." Mm-hmm. And like I said, that's probably as you said. Now the ballroom scene seems a little bit less creepy. I admit there's been times where I've watched it, I've like cringed and go, "Oh, this doesn't really feel right." In these terms, if the BBC was around, there would be certainly investigations going on and stuff like that. But
I can't repeat the messages my husband's been sending us while we've been recording this about that scene. I can't repeat them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was it. There is even a statue of Jareth in her room at the start of the movie.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there at the end as well. I think it's more prominent at the end when she's, you know, she gets back.
It's the whole thing. I think that she's basically just living out the play that she was acting out in her dream. And that is basically all of it. The character in the book wants to be desired by a king. Mm-hmm. And that's the way she's playing it.
I think while we're talking about like remakes, while we're talking about sequels, I would want... If they were to do something, I wouldn't want live action. I would want Studio Ghibli to do it because it fits their stuff perfectly.
It definitely fits their style.
Because, you know, stuff like Spirited Away, which is effectively, we have that point in that where there is, she goes through the tunnel and everything from there is a dream until the bit at the end where she comes back and she's like, okay, I know better. I'm optimistic about this new life ahead of me kind of thing. And that's what this is. It's basically that... hitting that point and realizing, oh, I'm an adult now, you know,
But in saying that, that fits within that 80s remit, because most of the Studio Ghibli's ones, like Spirited Away and some of those, they were all in the early 80s, mid 80s. So
Spirited Away was like late 90s, 2000s, I think.
I'm thinking of Kiki's Delivery and
Totoro.
And they were in the 80s. So the narrative of the 80s girl, teenage girl comes of age thing, which is a trope that is played in nearly every fucking movie in the 80s, and then flipped on its head, young boy coming of age, you know, part and parcel. But if it wasn't for those movies, none of us would have delusions of what it's like to be a teenager, really, because,
we all wanted to live the American fantasy at times, at different things.
But... me, 100%.
But
Going back to the ball scene though, Sarah, I felt
the
like
ball scene. Which one?
There are so many.
The shiny one.
They're all shiny.
Look at them shine. See them shine. It's turned into what's his name, Mr. something from
Mr. Mirror. Mirror.
The people in the background.
Mr. Susan, that's it. Mr. Susan. Look at them shine. See them.
It's very Bacchanalian, you know, like when you're seeing. All the people, it's like, it's not sexual, it's very touchy-touchy, how they're like lolling over each other.
I heard in the book it was a lot more
orgy-like. Yes. Yeah. So you could tell there was sort of something underlined, like they were all very, like I say, that's why I'm bringing the word in Bacchanalian, because it felt very drugs and alcohol-y and very grown up, and she's the one thing they're all staring at because she shouldn't be there.
I wonder if where Kubrick got his idea for Eyes Wide Shut type thing. But
I mean, if you look at her, she's going in with eyes like wide open, she's just kind of like, she's got that complete innocence face, and she's the only one in there without a mask on. As well, it's making the attention drawn to her. In that,
I did get told it can either be a sweet story or it could be a creepy story. It depends how you look at it, really. Jennifer Connelly's husband, Paul Bettany,
a vision out of
the Avengers for the uncouth, or the guy from A Knight's Tale. That's the
Chaucer. He played Chaucer.
Basically, he fell in love with Jennifer Connelly through Labyrinth and wanted to, like, to date her. So that's how his obsession grew, and then he ended up marrying her.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, though,
that's not odd.
Jennifer Connelly is, like, really difficult, because I think everyone has it. Everyone has it where there's someone they liked and then they're like, oh, wait, that's weird. Like, loads of my mates had a massive crush on Jennifer Connelly in Labyrinth, and they still do, even though she's 15 at the time of filming. But she doesn't look it. She looks a lot older in the actual film, but it's like going, that's a bit creepy.
Yeah. It's always a strange one. But like I said, that ball saying that, because I know Donna, who's in the chat, she's getting married this year. And that's just what I imagine her wedding to be like, like the ball scene from Labyrinth.
That'd be great with the masks.
The masks,
A friend of mine actually considered As the World Falls Down for their first dance. Unfortunately, it lost out to The Spy Who Loved Me. But it was
an interesting battle there.
I have a friend who got married as Sarah from the ball scene. Her husband wasn't in full pectoral tights at the time of the wedding, but like he had a longer take on the thing. But she had the full dress, she had like the headpiece made, and you know, it absolutely stunning. But it was one of those things where I just think that's a lot of effort.
Just for one day.
We're fucking off to Salem, and we're gonna just get married in our temple, and then we're done. You know, that's how we're doing it. No, honest to God, hands on heart, that is what's happening.
You texted us last week. I was like, please take videos, and that just sounds amazing. But
please take me with you.
Because if I tell people like I go to a temple, they're like. It's like I'm a member of the Satanic Temple is what me and my other half are part of.
Is this the LeVay religion?
No, okay. that's Satanists.
Separate.
We're the atheists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically, we're the ones that keep suing. We keep suing the American government about the abortion clinic.
Yeah. Nice.
And we've made abortion a religious right, mm-hmm. so that women in America can now, if they join the religion, have access to free abortion.
Mm-hmm. Fucking phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There's a brilliant documentary on Netflix about the whole organization. Yeah. It is. I love it. Yeah.
The thing is, people complain because obviously the guy who's in charge of the Satanic Temple is an absolute dickhead. But the whole point is trolling. The whole point is pointing out how stupid religion is.
Yes,
how stupid this is. And I'm like going, why did you think he would be a great guy? He's literally just like, lols. You know,
Lucian's
but it's so good what they do.
Yeah, yeah, Lucian's whole MO is basically, if you can have a visual representation of your religion, your gods, be it either any of the denominations that there are across the entire world, why can't we have our Lord and Savior? Why can't we have Satan? Mm-hmm. Satan doesn't mean that we believe in Satan. It means it's a representation of everything that is against the religions. But mm-hmm. honestly, the work that they do is absolutely amazing. Unreal. And I'm not someone who bangs on about stuff like that because religion is personal. You know, mm-hmm. if you believe in what you believe, that's your mm-hmm. good for you, you know. But yeah, that's
it's not like you are getting a lot of love in religion. The channel, Dan. Everyone's like very much loving you.
No, it's when religion takes away the rights of people who aren't part of that religion. That's mm-hmm. the whole thing that the Satanic Temple fight against, where it's going, oh, well, you can't have abortion because I believe that that's killing mm-hmm. living children. You're like going, well, okay, where's the evidence for that? Oh, you're believing it on faith and you have absolutely no evidence.
It's
okay,
very well, science-based.
Believe this on faith. Yeah. Therefore, we have a legal right, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's very much... It's very clever because obviously if America's like, oh, religion is a right, then they're like, cool, we're a religion. Oh, but you're not a real religion. Well, how are you a real religion? You know, and you're just going, right, okay.
But that's when it always gets messy and stuff like that as well. Because as you said, everyone's got the right to believe what they're, it's when they're trying to force that belief on other people that's where it gets, like, where I'm very much against it type thing. Because everyone's got the comfort, fair play to them. I know me and Graham has made many a jokes about God being a made-up imaginary character. Prove us wrong.
I make a lot of jokes because I'm agnostic because obviously I'm a person of science where I basically just go, you need proof before you can believe in something. But mm-hmm. the fact is, you know, I'm not going to say I'm fully atheist because I'm just going, you know.
I teeter between agnostic and atheism because...
If it appears in evidence, you're like, oh, cool, this is just a thing that we couldn't measure before, but now we actually know that it's there. But until that happens,
I pray to the Lord that is Jareth's Bulge. That's where we are. Now.
Yeah.
Only Lord and Savior is Keiko O'Brien, the great beast, the destroyer of worlds.
That's for Friday. That's Friday night. Sunday, it's Jareth.
Don't anger her. She'll find us.
Yes. So I always would recommend, like, if anyone hasn't watched any fantasy films or start, like especially if they're younger as well, like, say, to try out, like, especially in this genre, as a gateway to find and move into certain different aspects. So mm-hmm. I will always have a soft spot. And again, I'll probably watch this movie at least twice a year. And it'll always have a soft spot. I know, like, by the sound to you guys, the... And I love when movies do make people feel like that. It could be either like a most complicated story, it could be a simple story, but it's like the characters that we get and them moments in time that, sorry to go all mushy, but that's what makes movies magic for me.
Mm. Oh, well, that's a lovely way to end tonight because that was so sweet after the conversations we've had during it.
can I just mention two things that I want to get off my chest? Two things about the film that I want to mention the wonderful commentary on consumerism that is the woman with all the stuff, mm-hmm. where it's this idea of, you know, and our society nowadays, to get political, it's the fact of it's very much this whole like, hey, you know, you need new things. You need to lose weight. You need to do this. You need to become that. You need to get married. You need to have kids. You need to like have these toys. You know, you need to buy these things. You know, it's this idea of don't look at the problem and try to fix the problem. enjoy all of these creature comforts. And to have that in the 80s, where it's very much like going, hey, cool, you're happy, you have all this cool stuff, keep compliant. And it's very much kind of a criticism on that, that I think is like, you know, great that they managed to fit that in. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the bit that always confuses me is the door puzzle. The where, you know, where she's got the two guards and she's talking to them.
Oh, yes, that makes no sense at all.
I still don't get this, because does she... There's loads of things. Does she make the right decision? And B, is Hoggle actually taking her the wrong way later and Jareth's doing a bit? Or was Hoggle actually betraying Jareth? Because I don't know, because... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really confused by all of that. Like,
yeah,
you know,
we tried working it out last night, and the door puzzle, like guessing, like, oh, you must be saying this, or he must be telling the truth because he can't lie.
That, well, the first door says, right. Well, the one she goes through, the door goes like, oh, one of us always tells the truth and one of us always lies. So he must be telling the truth, or the game doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Yeah.
If he's telling truth about that, then he must be telling the truth, because otherwise it would be like, oh, well, they both tell the truth then, right? But then, yeah, it does my head in every time I watch it. I try and solve it and then just go like, no idea. And do you guys have a take on that?
Oh, it blows me brain trying to think of it. I've never been able to work it out yet.
I don't know what we're talking about.
No one has a take. Okay, cool. I'm glad I... brought that silencer up.
Well, you got the door knockers as well, haven't you? You know, yeah. There's two sections about which doors to go through in both of them. And I guess if we're looking into it again as like with a psychology thing, they're obviously turning points for Sarah to make these big decisions that she's never had to make before.
Yeah.
And I can't see, like on the first one, like you're saying, I'm with you guys. It does never make any sense whatsoever, that little bit. Well, if he's telling the truth, then you must be, and you must be lying. But it's the way she says the riddle that you go, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like,
she's confused you as a viewer. That's what she's done. She's riddled you guys.
Yeah. But, my friend pointed out that she's actually talking bollocks. Like, her logic is flawed, but she still gets the right door. But I don't know if that's true, you know?
Maybe she just fooled
them. I mean, it was a 50-50 chance, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Unless they both go the right way and the puzzle's a lie.
Yeah. So was the oubliette supposed to be uncertain death? Or was there another option that was way worse? Or did the other option take you to the castle? Or
if Hoggle hadn't turned up in the oubliette, would she have just stayed there? Because she wouldn't have known to pick the piece of wood up off the floor.
No,
that's true.
There's so many different little areas that you probably never get answers, but I love that you think you can still think or... ask the questions as well. But good thing as well, you mentioned the door knockers as well, because aren't you selling them on your website, Dan?
Yes, we have some door knockers.
Yes, the door knockers from Labyrinth you can buy from Bladen Marvelous' website. Dan?
we also have the worm will be here at the end of the week, hopefully. The wetter version of the worm. They're really expensive, and I'm so sorry for that, guys. They are so expensive. But they're wetter, so they're good quality. And
the wetter, the better.
Would agree.
We are trying to do them roughly around £5 cheaper than we found anywhere else, just to make it a little less stingy. But I promise you, we've tried to keep the cost down on it. I hate saying how much they are, so my brain just doesn't want to say it out loud. When we have anything high priced, I really feel guilty, and I'm all like, are you sure you want to buy this? Terrible saleswoman, terrible.
Yes.
You know, but
this is the thing about nerddom. Things cost as much as someone's willing to pay for them.
Yeah,
and absolutely. You know that there's going to be someone who has that much cash who's like, I want that worm. I never thought I'd say that out loud. That is a phrase. That is weird, but you know, okay. I've never said that. You know,
yes.
You need to be comfy for me.
If you like any weird and wonderful gadgets and, like, say, movie or horror memorabilia, please check out Dan's website. The link will be in the description below, down there. Like I say, and they are good quality stuff you get as well. Like, especially if you see her at the con. Literally, we spent probably about an hour just looking over the stuff. They were just, like I say, stuff you wanted to buy, you have to buy. So, yes, that's my sales pitch there. Not very good, but I do try.
Can I ask a question
about
of appeal. I just want to know if any of you guys have spotted the hidden Bowie faces in the movie.
Yes.
Only two of the obvious ones, yeah. But I know there's more.
There's seven.
Oh. Is there? I've spotted three, I think. But
there's seven of them.
At least one or two. I know the one where the rocks are all placed in strategic.
I think that's the probably easiest one to find, yeah. That one, yeah.
And then there is another one, but I do know one, at least one more. I know this.
Yes.
You have to look in like the top corners of the screens for like in amongst the rocks of the labyrinth walls and in the branches and things like that.
The branches, yeah. That's one.
Yeah, I've only seen the massive stone one and the one in the branches. I haven't seen any of the others.
So there's a game for the people who are listening at home.
There you go.
Spot all the Bowies and post it on the Facebook group and show us where the Bowies are. So there. So that is the contest for the nerds there. We've given you homework for once. Haha. So yes. So thank you guys so much for partaking in the Labyrinth chat. I know I've tried to finish it a few times. Sorry, it's been a hectic day. Join in on Monday tomorrow for the wonderful Dan and Sammy's and Peaches Monsters Up North.
The other Peaches.
Where they are.
Not me.
No. The goth Peaches, like I say, and
Peaches and Scream.
Yes, Peaches and Scream, and she has a Chucky with her as well. Talking about
Stan.
Mine's just Stan as the Chucky and Tiffany. So they're talking about all about killing dolls, and like I say, Jennifer Tilly will probably be mentioned a few times, or hopefully.
Oh, quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Yeah. Good quite to know. A bit. Good to know. Graham and Goodwill will be live on Friday on doing the second episode of Strange New Worlds. Don't know what time it is. We will not be live next Sunday. Well, we will be live, just not on the internet. We will be on the main stage at a convention up in the northeast called SunnyCon. It's going to be full of loads of anime people, the Geordies and crazy arseholes.
And then they're going to listen to us for an hour talking about cartoons.
Yes. And we have to try and be child friendly as well.
Yes, we do.
When we say child friendly, we're not meaning a sort of,
We're not going to get children on the stage and be friendly with them, Graham. No.
Right, okay. I'm not down with that.
Well,
no, you just can't swear.
The only way I'm going to get around this, because I'm going to, I can't do it because it's a nervous thing, especially like being on stage. I am going to put this out, and this will be live.
7:30 on Friday for trekking up north.
Yeah,
Goodwill just prompting me in the chat.
I will tell. Don't worry. Next Sunday, I am going to say this. I am going to put a swear jar. So every time I do swear, I need someone in the audience to take a note and keep a count. I will put £1 in the swear jar for every time I swear, and that will go to charity. And I'll let someone from, like, say, the Discord or on the group choose that charity. But I promise, because I can't promise I'm not going to swear. Sorry, Donna, I love you. I know you put us on the main stage, and I do appreciate it. But I don't think I'm going to get through an hour without my nerves and swearing in front of an audience. So.
Surely at least plan it to be comedic, where basically you don't swear for the whole thing and then your last
and then right
lines
at the
are
end.
Like, thank fuck we got over that. Over.
Yes.
Right at the end.
But yes, so that is going to be, like, see, our little task there. We will have stickers. We will be approachable. We are hoping to meet a few people that we've never met before. Say hello in person. Please lick a Goodwill. Goodwill likes to be licked. So
yes. That is a must.
That is a must.
Does not like being licked. Do not lick.
So we do have some special stickers as well where they are shiny. So if anyone does lick a Goodwill, I will give you a shiny sticker.
Dan, it is exactly what you think it is. Is someone going up to Goodwill?
I
don't
like
it. No. Don't do it. No. Lick me. Actually, no, I might be in makeup, so don't lick me.
But yes. So, anyone
what
else?
Have I gotten myself into here? Who are you people? What is this?
But it is
do?
A cult.
You can't
so...
back out now.
It's a cult, Dan.
It
You're
is a
in.
Cult, yes. But don't worry, like, so you've been adopted as Sam's, like, long lost sister, so it's like it's fine.
Yeah, there's no licking involved there.
You're quite a distance away. It's gonna take a while for someone to actually find. And to be
just
honest,
you wait.
If anyone did try and lick Dan, I think Dan would have a harder right hand than me. So,
I think you would be fucked.
I'd be able to hear colours. I think if someone licked me, I'd go into that next realm. You know, I'll be like,
love it.
But yes, so has anyone got anything else to want to plug before we do round up?
No, just be sure to watch Monsters 7 o'clock tomorrow, please. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep, yeah, watch that. Apparently, I'm on the next one, so because my schedule is just, you know this thing where you kind of start off with a schedule where you can see things in a calendar. Mine just looked like a spirograph pattern.
That is one thing.
Pattern at the minute, and I'm just saying, things are happening. You know.
Well, that is one thing I didn't mention on the podcast because I couldn't remember what episode was next. So just to announce, the next episode after Chucky and Tiffany is The Phantom of the Opera. There you go.
There you go.
I did it.
And we have been planning the episodes for the rest of, for most of the year now. So we have a plan in place. The podcast 2.0 is going well, going stronger. Yeah. And we are hoping to reach new heights as well. So thank you, guys. And thank you, everyone who's been in the chat. Thank you for everyone in the Discord who does keep us going on a daily basis. And thank you for everyone in the group. It is an enjoyable thing that I don't hate. So, yeah, that's probably the best thing I can say.
Yeah. So. Peachy, do you have any more cool stuff to show? Have you got any more memorabilia lying around?
I've got loads, but I didn't bring it all down because I didn't want it to just be look at all this.
In case you had a massive pile of it next to you and you hadn't brought it all.
I mean, I've got Ludo there as well.
Ludo Church.
And Sarah and Worm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now we know how to steal them because them are quite expensive as well. They go for quite a penny. So we're going to rob Sarah.
Says the man with his huge pop vinyl figures.
Most of mine are worth a 10 pound. I know for a fact Ludo's worth about 80 quid. Sarah's about 120. Mm-hmm. I think Jared's about £80 as well. So,
yep.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Hoggle's the most expensive one that I've seen at the moment, around between 120 to 180, depending.
Mm-hmm. Can I just make a plea to Funko here? You are missing a trick by not making Didymus and Ambrosius.
Yeah. Who said stop?
Dan hates Funko's, bless her. She does. I know.
Look, I'm not a big Funko collector, but I do collect the Labyrinth ones. So I would like a Didymus and Ambrosius one, please.
Yeah. And just to see anyone who does are keep watching as well, it is Sammy's birthday next month. 40. She is turning the big 40. So everyone, buy her a fucking present. There you go.
30th of July, kids. Just so you know.
Presents are available from readingmarvels.com or .co.uk.
Yes, they are.
See.
And they can be gift wrapped.
We should have a little donation tin or whatever at SunnyCon, just being like, you know, for just £5 a month, you can buy Sammy some absolute cash.
Just £5 a month.
You can sponsor us, Sammy.
But anyway, so same bat time, same bat channel.
Stay nerdy, everyone.
Bye.